You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, an expert in abortion policy tells us what's at stake with a recent ruling about Wisconsin's 1849 law, which had been previously interpreted to ban most abortions after the end of Roe v. Wade. First, Larry Mueller joins me for the listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio year-end member drive. Think about how much you've learned from and enjoyed WPR programs in 2023 with 2024 just around the corner. Take some action now. Give the public media service you rely on a strong start in the new year at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And our goal is 20 gifts this hour. And the goal's important. It's set to make sure we have the funding needed for the news, the talk, and the music you rely on.
We'll meet that goal one donation at a time. We can start with yours right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is committed to quality, and that's why we've been around for more than 100 years. And since listener donations make up the largest piece of our funding for the stations, that quality is possible thanks to you.
We've been able to change and grow with the times over the years, over the decades, thanks to you and to people who like you who have given over the years. Make a difference right now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We do not have Taco Tuesday here at Wisconsin Public.
We should. Why don't we?
We've got...
Well, one of our colleagues once set fire to tortillas in the microwave. I think that might be why. I'm not naming names.
We do have a T-shirt Tuesday, though.
That's true. We never set fire to those.
We never set fire to them. And it's, you know, that WPR T-shirt, I love them. It's become a tradition during member drives with a new design. We offer something new every year. And today's your chance to get your hands on some of our previous old styles, you could say. Ask for your mystery T-shirt when you give $12 a month now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Hopefully the perpetrator of the torch tortilla incident isn't listening right now. I'm not naming names, though. Celebrate this. This is a season of giving. This is a special time between Thanksgiving and the New Year. A lot of people are thinking about giving now. Celebrate with a gift that doesn't involve wrapping paper or, you know, guessing at the right size.
With just a few minutes of your time, you can make a gift of the essential public media service you rely on every day of the year. Feels great. Find out now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You are part of Wisconsin Public Radio's community of listeners. Whether you've been listening for years or just a few months, you can become part of our community of members, people who support the news and talk and music that they value.
And if you've never given before, you could start with a gift of, say, $120, or better yet, make that an ongoing gift of $10 a month. Your contribution, any amount, makes you a member, and because the largest piece of our funding comes from members, you really do make a difference. It all starts with your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Our goal is to get 20 gifts over the course of this hour. It's an important goal. It's set to make sure we have the funding for great conversations, for great programs that keep you informed and inspired. Give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And today's your chance to add a WPR T-shirt to your collection. Make a gift of $12 a month or more for the programs you value. Let us know the size you want, and you'll receive a mystery T-shirt. So there's some good ones out there. Join in the fun of T-Shirt Tuesday with your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and wear your shirt with pride, knowing you make the news and inspiration we rely on possible.
If you are not already a sustainer, you can become one right now. It's easy to set up. You'll make ongoing monthly donations, provide reliable support for the programs you love. You can do that from your bank account or your credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Lisa in La Crosse says, I appreciate that WPR dives deep into issues rather than covering them in short sound bites. Well, that is what we really try to do, Larry, on your show and this show and news and all across the board.
And it's a lot of fun for us, and it's interesting, and we learn a lot.
Oh, definitely.
And I hope you learn a lot, too. If you haven't contributed yet, think about what you've learned and what the radio, your radio station means to you. It's powerful and really makes a difference if you contribute at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Can't do it without your support. Make your important gift right now. We really do appreciate it when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. This is Central Time. A Dane County Circuit Court judge ruled last week that Wisconsin's 1849 statute, which had been previously understood to prohibit most abortions in the state, only applies to situations where violence results in a miscarriage and doesn't ban consensual abortions. That ruling is being celebrated by abortion rights supporters who say it's a step in the right direction toward expanding reproductive rights in the state. Critics of the decision say, among other things, that abortion is not a matter for legal interpretation, but for the Wisconsin state legislature to decide. The Sheboygan County District Attorney says he plans to appeal the ruling. In the meantime, will follow the order and not prosecute abortion providers. Our next guest has been following the issue and the story and is here to talk about what comes next for abortion access in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following the legal case about abortion in Wisconsin? Do you think this ruling is a step in the right direction or not? Are you confused about the current legal status of abortion in Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Elisa Von Hagel is a professor in the Social Inquiry Department at UW-Superior, where her research focuses on reproductive rights and abortion policy. Elisa, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me this afternoon.
Can you walk us through this case, the people who brought it, and how we ended up at this point where, at least for now, that 1849 law appears not to block abortions?
Absolutely. So initiated by Josh Call and Tony Evers, as well as a few doctors, they filed lawsuit to challenge this 1849 ban after the U.S. Supreme Court made the ruling in Dobbs, which invalidated Roe and thus, as you mentioned, invalidated protections for abortion in Wisconsin.
Now, we've seen reference in this new case to past legal cases that invoke this 1849 law. Can you talk about how those rulings led to this and what this judge ended up deciding about what that 1849 law means in 2023?
Absolutely. So there was a Wisconsin Supreme Court case in 1994 involving an instance in which a husband had attacked his wife 5 days before her due date, and he was prosecuted for this action, which led to the fetal death. And in this particular case, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin determined that abortion was not included in this 1849 ban. Rather, it only included the an non-consensual act in which somebody batters a woman in order to end her pregnancy.
Now, up till this was a judge clarifying, yes, this is what I meant in a previous provisional ruling. Up till then, since the Dobbs decision, since the end of Roe v. Wade, it seemed like there was a general consensus that no, the 1849 law meant no consensual abortions or very limited consensual abortions. Could you talk about what led to people behaving in that way up until this ruling? What led us to think, okay, this 1849 law effectively bans most abortions?
Well, so the question remains whether or not the end of Roe would in fact bring us back to this initial ruling or not. And that's actually what the lawsuit was. One of the issues that was raised in the initial lawsuit was to ask the court to make a determination or a clarification of what the law actually entails. And so that was primarily one of the primary motivations behind this lawsuit was to seek clarification of whether or not the 1849 ban stands as previously interpreted, or whether or not this 1994 interpretation by the Supreme Court is going to stand, as opposed to the first initial interpretation of the 1849 ban.
Now, this isn't the last stop for this legal challenge, but I want to set that aside for a moment because over the course of, the last 50 years or so since the Roe v. Wade decision, there have been laws passed in Wisconsin creating requirements, limits on access to abortion, as I understand it, Elisa, anyway. Those are still in effect. So can you talk about what kind of things, what kind of more recent laws are still in effect when it comes to abortion?
Absolutely. So in the state of Wisconsin, abortion is banned after 20 weeks after the probable fertilization. Women are required to obtain an ultrasound prior to an abortion. There also is a 24-hour wait period as well as in-person counseling required, thus necessitating two visits. A medication abortion cannot be prescribed or taken remotely via telemedicine. And we have limits on public funding and insurance coverage for abortion in the state. And so there are still numerous hoops and restrictions that keep women, particularly low-income women, from accessing abortion, you know, before the Dobbs ruling came out and is still in effect today.
Right. And so it may look from the outside of Wisconsin that we just saw this really big change, and we did from a legal perspective of this new ruling, when it comes to the reality of can someone who is seeking abortion access abortion, they might not notice that big a difference. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And particularly when you look at different parts of the state. And so whether if you're down south towards or in Dane County, Milwaukee County, this ruling by the circuit court judge certainly, you know, made a significant change allowing the Planned Parenthoods in those counties to reopen. However, if you look in other places around the state, there, you know, prior to the ruling in Dobbs, there were no abortion providers anywhere near where, you know, people lived, whether it's Western Wisconsin, Northwestern Wisconsin. And so, you know, people already were looking to Minnesota, Illinois, other locations if they were to obtain an abortion. And so it really depends where you are in the state, how much this has a direct impact on one's ability to obtain an abortion.
Elisa von Hagel is with us, professor in the Social Inquiry Department at UW-Superior, where her research focuses on reproductive rights and abortion policy. She's with us to talk about a ruling last week that could ultimately lead to changes in Wisconsin's abortion law. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you agree or disagree with a judge's interpretation of an 1849 statute in Wisconsin saying that doesn't actually block consensual abortions, abortion that a pregnant woman seeks out? Would you like to see this case make its way to the state Supreme Court? Do you want the state legislature and the governor to get together and figure out something different altogether? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with UW-Superior Professor Elisa von Hagel about the latest updates in a long legal battle over abortion in Wisconsin. A judge's ruling saying that an 1849 statute in Wisconsin doesn't block abortions in the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about what that means, your hopes for what comes out of this court challenge, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Now, operating under this 1849 statute, Elisa, the only time an abortion could be performed legally under that interpretation was if the life of the mother was at risk. There's a process for determining that. But let's detour to Texas, kind of where all eyes are, where the state Supreme Court recently ruled against a 31-year-old woman who obtained an abortion in another state. Ultimately, can you talk about that case in Texas and what it tells us about the threat to the mother's health and life exemptions in abortion laws?
Absolutely. So in the case here, we have a woman who had a high-risk pregnancy. The fetus was diagnosed with trisomy 8, which almost all end in stillbirth or miscarriage. And so she filed a court order in order to have the courts allow her to obtain an abortion in the state of Texas. as you mentioned, the Supreme Court determined that her case did not meet the medical exception standard that is in place there. And the court also ruled that the state medical board needed to provide more guidance on the medical exception because, as written by legislators, there is often in this particular case, as well as in states across the country, a lack of clarity or precise medical terminology that clearly indicates when or when a abortion would not be acceptable under this exception. And so, as we're seeing in states across the country, it is very unclear for medical professionals to clearly determine what constitutes an exception to these abortion prohibitions that are in place.
With that in mind, are we seeing medical professionals err on the side of caution, saying, given the lack of clarity, I'm not going to risk, you know, jail time?
Absolutely. I mean, as you mentioned, you know, these are felony charges that can lead to years in prison, thousands upon thousands of dollars of fines. Also, hospitals are very leery, given the concern for litigation, if, you know, something was to, you know, be brought before the courts. And so we have physicians that are, you know, concerned for their livelihood, their ability to continue to provide medical care to their patients, as well as hospitals that are concerned with liability issues. And so we see physicians, hospitals, very erring on the side of caution and being extraordinarily limited in what they would determine or deem to be a medical exception.
Let's look to the future now. Of this case in Wisconsin, we already have the district attorney in Sheboygan County saying, I think the judge got this one wrong. This should be left to the legislature to decide, saying this will be challenged in court. What are you watching for next as this, I assume, goes up through the court system in the state?
Right. So initially, or next, it would go to the Court of Appeals. There is quite a backlog in the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, and thus that'll be another long wait to see the case work its way through there. It's not likely, if it does, in fact, which seems likely that it would make its way to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, it's not likely that the case would be heard until early 2025. So there'll be more rulings certainly coming out on this issue, but it'll be a long wait till we have a final determination by the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
One other possible outcome would be the state legislature passing revised laws and the governor signing those laws. Does that seem at all likely, given a Republican-dominated state legislature and a Democratic governor?
I certainly would not place money on that happening, but I think it is very, very unlikely, if pretty much impossible.
Alisa, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alisa von Hagel is a professor in the Social Inquiry Department at the University of Wisconsin-Superior, where her research focuses on reproductive rights and abortion policy. We've been looking at a recent legal ruling about Wisconsin's 1849 law that could ultimately change abortion law here in the state. Now, Larry Mailer joins me for the year-end member drive, your chance to support the news and the conversations you count on every day on Wisconsin Public Radio, programs that keep you in touch, informed, and inspired. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important as we end this year and look forward to 2024.
And this hour, we have a goal, Rob, of 20 gifts. And thank you very much if you've already given. If you haven't yet, give now and help ensure that your community has access to WPR's essential service. Join in at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
In that last conversation, we dug into a complicated issue with, 180 years of legal history here in Wisconsin, abortion law in the state, how it is changing, the latest from the courts. It's the kind of informative, substantial conversation you can count on every day here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
And very even-handed. WPR is listener-supported, and that means that your donation at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. So choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
Become a sustainer. Choose a monthly gift amount to come from your bank account or your credit card, and then it'll continue for as long as you want it to.
Because WPR is one of these things you never want to live without, make your support ongoing with a sustaining gift. It's convenient and it's flexible. You can get started right now. Give $10 or $20 a month or whatever you choose at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Hey, when you make a donation during this year-end member drive, you're going to help WPR thrive in this new year in 2024.
Your first ever gift or your extra year-end gift right now is so important as we close out 2023 and get ready for the new year.
There's going to be no shortage of news and issues and great music and conversations in 2024. Thanks to your support, WPR will be here to deliver it all. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Easy to spend a dollar or more a day on things that are just kind of part of your routine, a cup of coffee, your favorite snack.
Consider the news, info, and inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day from listening to WPR. And then think about it. Maybe a dollar a day, $30 a month, is the right donation for you. Sign up right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Support the programs that you enjoy every day.
This hour, we have a goal of 20 gifts. Thanks if you've already given. If you haven't, join in right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You make WPR possible when you give.
Hey, the clock is ticking on T-shirt Tuesday. Ask for your mystery T-shirt when you give $12 a month or more today only. You can let the world know you value and support WPR programs with a surprise T-shirt design from the last few years. Take advantage of T-shirt Tuesday. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're a sustaining member, thank you so much. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You count on us for great conversations, news, information. We count on you to help pay for it. Make your super important gift right now online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, have you ever bought something online on a whim and then wondered later why you did it? A researcher joins us to talk about the link between social media content and those impulse buys. First, Larry Mueller joins me. You make Wisconsin Public Radio possible when you give during this year-end member drive. Join in to support the news and conversations you count on all year long with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This hour, we have a goal of 20 gifts, and thank you very much if you've already given.
If you haven't, join in now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift makes the news, talk, and music you value possible.
Have you ever heard something on WPR that you wanted to pass along to a friend? With program notes on WPR.org and audio archives, you can pass things on. Maybe you already do.
It's a great way to stay connected with others by sharing ideas and stories and information. We help you stay connected with your friends and family and with the world. Your donation keeps that connection going.
Make your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
As the donor, you get to decide how much to give, and maybe $100 or $200 a month is the right amount for you.
That might be what you spend every month on takeout or entertainment, for example. Things you enjoy that make life better, just like listening to WPR. The important thing is that you decide what amount is right for you, and then make your gift at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
We have a lot of choices these days. Even something as simple as your morning coffee comes with a list of questions. Light or dark roast? Room for cream? Whole? 2%? Oat? Almond? Or soy milk?
Large black coffee.
Do you mean a venti?
No, I mean a lot.
Today, let WPR make a decision for you. It's T-shirt Tuesday.
Don't you see, man? The T-shirt is everything.
Ask for a mystery T-shirt when you give $12 a month. Tell us the size and we'll pick the shirt for you. It's as easy as deciding where to get trustworthy news and smart entertainment. WPR, of course. Give now and ask for your mystery shirt. Here's how.
Make a gift. Ask for that shirt at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Larry Mueller. Your support during this year-end member drive makes the news and talk and music you count on here on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Your gift of 10 or 20 bucks a month, whatever amount you choose, really does make a difference.
And it's easy to give. All we need is your name, contact information. It's the amount of your gift and how you'd like to pay.
It takes just a few minutes to make that gift to Wisconsin Public Radio. Those few minutes will fund your daily listening. Your support right now does make a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks so much. If you're already a sustaining member of WPR, your ongoing monthly contributions provide a very reliable stream of funding for the programs you enjoy.
As you think back on the things that have added value to your life this year, take this opportunity to increase your monthly support by a few bucks a month. We're happy to help you do that. Just go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Our goal is 20 gifts this hour, a very important goal that's set to make sure we have the funding for high-quality programs that keep you informed and inspired. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And today is your chance to add a Wisconsin Public Radio T-shirt to your collection. Make a gift of 12 bucks a month or more for the programs you value. Let us know what size you want. You'll get a mystery T-shirt. Join in the fun of T-Shirt Tuesday with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Then, wear your shirt with pride, knowing you make the news and inspiration we rely on possible.
If you're not a sustainer, you could become one right now. It's easy to set up, and you'll make ongoing monthly donations to provide reliable support for the programs you love. You can do that from your bank account, or some people do it from their credit card at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Kathleen in Madison says WPR has consistently exceptional programs. Kathleen, thank you so much. And Kathleen gets it. The secret is we have exceptional programs because of Kathleen and the thousands of other people who are members now and who have given over the years. That's let Wisconsin Public Radio grow and evolve and change and improve over the years. How about you? Join Kathleen now with your gift.
You know, I so enjoy hosting this, my program, and I know you love hosting your show.
Oh, yeah.
And it's because we, for one thing, we learn a lot, and we also hear a lot from you about what we're doing, and it's so important to us. I hope it's important to you. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution.
Can't do it without you. Make that gift. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks so much for your support. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, social media. You are online. You get overwhelmed scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. You see an ad. You usually wouldn't click on the ad, but you do. And you buy the thing. And then the next day, you think, why did I do that? Well, our next guest has some research that might have an answer for you. And you could join in at 800-642-1234 if you have a personal experience along those lines to share. That's 800-642-1234. Matthew Pittman is an assistant professor of advertising and public relations at the University of Tennessee. He's co-author of new research on why social media can make us more prone to impulse purchases. Matthew, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's start with a concept before we get to your research and social media. This idea of cognitive overload. What is that?
So human beings, even though we use computers, our brains are not computers. We have a finite or limited processing capability. And certain things like social media, because there's so many different forms of media, there's text and video, and there's a post from our high school friend, and there's something from our spouse, and there's a post from The Rock about a workout routine. All these things use up little bits of processing power, leaving us depleted the more we use it.
I have a for example. When I first started hosting an afternoon talk show, it was a little stressful. I was cramming a lot of information into my brain. And I remember a couple times going to a restaurant after the show, meeting my family, picking up a menu, and just not having the processing power, just handed it. My wife knows what I like. She ordered for me. Is that cognitive overload?
Yeah, that would be, that sounds like emotional overload too, and I wish you the best, but certainly
well,
that would be some kind of cognitive overload too, especially if you went right from work to do any other task. We're not very good at task switching or multitasking. So yeah, that would certainly qualify.
Okay, now let's go to your research. You're looking at social media. Tell us a little bit about the experiments you set up and what you're hoping to find out.
So we used food as an item for all three studies because presumably everybody has to eat and we're all at least a little bit interested. Study one, we used like one of those meal subscription kit, Green Chef type things. Study two, we used ice cream. And study three, we used coffee. And we would, there was one condition that was a control condition where we didn't do anything. We just let people look at the ad and actually use their mental capabilities to decide, do I want this or not? And then another condition, we would have them memorize like a 9-digit number, which is how psychology studies have done this in the past. And then the third condition, which is what we wanted to prove, we had them use Instagram for 30 seconds. And having them use Instagram, their own Instagram, for only 30 seconds left them more mentally depleted than memorizing a number and way more than the control condition. And then once they were in that depleted state, they were more likely to be influenced by or susceptible to popularity metrics like a high number of likes or a high number of comments.
Okay, so the alarming thing to me there is 30 seconds. Like, I know even I'm not a huge social media guy, but 30 seconds, I could do that easy. That small an amount of time made a noticeable difference.
Yeah, that's a walk down the hall. That's a walk to check the mail. But it makes sense because in that 30 seconds, compare it to, you know, television or a movie or other media. 30 seconds on social media, you can see a post from like five brands, 10 different people, some of whom you know in real life, some you don't. So our brain is like a Rolodex. We're constantly shifting through how to evaluate. Do I know that person? Oh yeah, they're cool. Do I know this person? Ah, they're kind of weird. Do I know that person? Well, they're a liar, so I can't trust that post. And all the shifting depletes our resources.
Now, another angle here is you also played with the number of people or the number of fictional likes on the ads you were showing people. Did that, I guess, social media peer pressure have an effect on the decisions people made?
Yeah, so that's important to note. I don't think that using social media or cognitive overload can create a desire in us for a product out of nowhere, but kind of like alcohol can reduce our inhibitions. I think in the depleted state, if there's something we already had our eye on, like a nice glass tumbler from WPR, then maybe we are, and normally we'd say, well, I don't need that. I can't afford it. But if we're just a little depleted, then that voice on our shoulder goes away and we just kind of think, you know what? Other people liked it. And this one has 10,000 likes or 100,000 likes. Maybe it is good enough. All right, I'll go ahead and buy it.
We're talking to Matthew Pittman, assistant professor of advertising and public relations at the University of Tennessee, looking at his research on social media and impulse purchases. Turns out just a little bit of time scrolling on a social media feed may make us a little more vulnerable to online advertising or that product that an influencer suggests we go out and buy. You can join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. If you have a question for a guest about his research or an experience to share, 800-642-1234. Matthew, I want to talk about what we can do with your research. What is your advice for social media users out there to, I guess, buyer beware?
So one thing that I have done, because I first wanted to study this because I am a victim of this too, I purchased on TikTok, I saw a thing that was you can get a Lego replica of you and your significant other. And I thought my wife would love two little Lego pieces of us with our names on it. And it came and she said, what is this? And I was like, oh no, what have I done? But my kids love it. So it's not a total loss.
Okay.
But one thing I've started doing since researching and thinking about this is I put things in a shopping cart and then let it sit for a day or two. And then I come back and check. And with a clear head, I'll think, do I really want this or need this? And 90% of the time, the answer is no.
Interesting. A cool down period. I like that. Now, another use, and I know another of your research areas is ethics. I could see an advertiser look at your research and say, aha, yes, we're going to use this. But I'm guessing they probably already know this, Matthew.
Yeah, I'm sure the algorithm knows to target people like sports fans before the big game comes up, target them then when their minds are all frantic and frenzied, thinking about, yeah, you should buy this championship t-shirt. Yeah, I should definitely do it. We're going to win.
And do you have thoughts on how we can, I guess, recognize when we're feeling that cognitive overload, whether it's because of social media or we just started hosting a radio show or whatever the case might be?
Yeah, aside from therapy, which would be helpful for all of us, I think just checking sometimes I try to spend a couple, like whether it's walking down the hall or, again, checking the mail. Sometimes I just don't bring my phone, which seems kind of novel now, just to let my brain reset and be bored for a second. Sometimes it's before I fire up an app to use Instagram or TikTok, I'll just check my, make sure my goals align with my motivations. Ask myself, like, all right, what am I expecting to do? Okay, I'm going to do this for 2 minutes. Hopefully I'll see something funny. I'll see a cute animal, and then I can log off. So kind of being more deliberate and intentional about our use before we start going. Because once we start going, we can scroll ourselves right down a very dangerous and strange rabbit hole.
I wanted to ask you about different platforms and maybe some future research. You focused on Instagram here. Are there other social media platforms you'd want to tackle in future research?
Yeah, I think the more media rich or the more involved, like presumably the more it would tax all of your brain power, because now you're evaluating text and an animated GIF, and there's a talking head video, and there's some TikTok videos that I follow, and it could basically give someone a seizure. It's like a Reddit thread story read as text over top of a weird video game in the background. So it's like for the super duper ADD, media like that, I think, is really taxing compared to like Twitter, which is a little more tame. Certainly emails, Reddit, the ones that are most primarily text-based. I think those don't use as many mental processing resources as the ones that are like every single media all at once.
Let's bring on a caller. Anastasia is with us in Stevens Point. Anastasia, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
So I actually work for a Gen Z and Millennial market research company, and we talk about this all the time. And granted, we're generally talking to brands about how they can reach Gen Z and Millennials, but the data overwhelmingly shows that when they're looking at ads and actually following through and purchasing, it's always on social media. It's the most, like, more so than any other traditional advertising source. And that's why brands have to be on social media if they want to reach those generations. But in terms of impulsive social media buys, you know, when these Gen Z and millennials, which we consider 13 to 39, when they're seeing hundreds of pieces of content, thousands of pieces of content every single day, you know, overall, it just kind of wears down your resistance to making that purchase. Mm-hmm. You see it over and over and over, you know, the way that advertisers used to try and attract people by, you know, catching them to and from their job on billboards that they might see. Now they're able to reach teens like every second of every day on social media. And so that distance from initially seeing the product to actually making the purchase is so much shorter.
Anastasia, I want to ask you, doing this kind of research for your day job, does it make you think about social media use differently?
Absolutely. You know, we also ask them how they feel about being on social media, and it's pretty mixed across the board, but they understand that it's an addictive platform, and they're making impulse decisions there because social media is naturally impulsive and encourages that impulse.
Anastasia, thank you so much. Interesting perspective. Matthew, what do you think about what we heard from her?
That was really cool, and it makes sense. If you think back in the day, you would see whatever, an infomercial on TV, you had to call, or even going to a website requires more effort, intentionality, more time. And now the time between you have an impulse and you get that, you know, your order has been placed notification could be as, I think it's like 2 or 3 clicks on some things. Like you click on the item, boom, you know, ship. If it already has your credit card info and your shipping address, just a few clicks. It's crazy to think how the time between impulse and purchase has been reduced to mere seconds.
Anastasia, thanks a lot for sharing that. And Matthew, it also makes me think, you know, you, when you were testing people, you had them recite that 9-digit number or spend 30 seconds on Instagram and then look at the ad once. As Anastasia mentioned, we might see the same ad on social media, you know, 50 times over the course of 20 minutes or something like that if you keep scrolling down. Is that something else you'd want to study in the future, that the frequency and intensity of seeing the same ad message?
Yeah, that's a really good point. The more we've all seen, I'm sure, posts where you see, again, you see the ad the 20th time, you're like, oh, this is very familiar. And our brains are wired to like things that are familiar. And I'm sure when we see it for the 20th, 30th, 40th time, we don't even know, is this an ad or is this somebody I follow? Do I know them? Do they like me? Do I like them? And all of that would be, yeah, certainly make us more likely to purchase. So that, yeah, the next logical study would be repeated exposure. And I'm sure it would be significant. So the question will be, how many extra views does it take to move the needle?
Well, Matthew, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for sharing your research with us.
Thanks for having me. It's a really cool topic.
That's Matthew Pittman, assistant professor of advertising and public relations at the University of Tennessee. We listened back to our talk with him about his research on social media and why it can make us more likely to buy stuff on impulse. Now, Larry Mueller joins me for the year-end member drive here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on WPR for in-depth discussions. It's your support that keeps these conversations going strong. Your gift now makes a huge difference as we wrap up this year and head into 2024. Do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when 20 people join in, we'll be on track to support the quality and variety you enjoy every day at WPR.
WPR is listener powered. That means your donation right now makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, the segments that you have on the show are so much fun, and they go across a broad range of topics.
That's right, yeah. Variety, you too, on the Larry Mueller Show. I mean, if you look at the whole network, wow, so much variety, and that's all possible thanks to listeners like you. You make it all possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it's T-shirt Tuesday.
All right. It's not much longer.
No, not very much longer. You'll receive a mystery T-shirt when you give $12 a month or more, a mystery WPR T-shirt.
Right.
Support your favorite programs. Let us know what size you want, and we'll surprise you with a popular design from the past few years. Maybe you'll receive a replacement of the favorite WPR shirt that you've worn out, or add a new one to your collection. It all starts with your gift of $12 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life is enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the host and the guests both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
You can support Wisconsin Public Radio with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller with me on our year-end member drive. Let's break format here, Larry. We were talking earlier about our radio nightmares. You had one you were just telling me about where nothing, what happened?
I had a live guest supposed to be on the show with me, and the guest didn't show up. And then I'll do an open line.
Sure, callers will fill it in, right?
Yeah, but the lines were down. So I had no guest, and I had no lines, and I had nothing. I mean, it was like, it all happened in an instant. So I started talking, and I was talking, you know, sort of with the engineers in mind, and talking about how these things can happen. But it's first time in a long time that I haven't had a guest and I didn't have phone lines. And I talked for 10 minutes, roughly.
Which felt like 2 hours.
Felt like 2 hours because I was really running out of things. And Tom Clark showed up. And Tom came in and said, I think, Ellen, by the way, I had an engineer between my legs, more or less, trying to fix the whatever was underneath the table.
That is the stuff of my nightmares. Literally, I have that nightmare recurringly. Now, we don't have much time left. I probably shouldn't have brought this up. But you can help prevent the radio nightmares of the future. Keep things working smoothly here at Wisconsin Public Radio with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Support Larry and support all your favorite programming here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Make that gift, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks so much.